And now for reading and writing and radio.
Marcy zipped the case around her cello, tucked her music into the back pocket, and sheathed her bow in the long pocket on the front. Behind her, Miss Fritz had already begun Sue Ellen's lesson. Sue Ellen was laboring through three octaves of E minor scales. Marcy tucked her cello to her side and walked quietly to the door. She opened it gently, stepped into the hall, and gave the door a good, hard swing. The second before it slammed, shuddering the building, she realized what she'd done and stood paralyzed. Sue Ellen stopped on a high D-sharp. Miss Fritz's heels hit the floor and hurried across the room. The door was flung open, but Marcy couldn't make herself turn. "You didn't need to slam it," Miss Fritz said acidly, all but slammed it herself, and returned to Sue Ellen. E minor started up again. Marcy stood. She knew why she'd slammed the door. For the instant, going through it, her mind vacant of thoughts, she'd had the feeling she was leaving her parents' bedroom through the door that never latched unless you gave it a good hard slam. How many times she'd obeyed the command, "You have to slam that door!" This time she'd done it automatically. But how could she ever explain this to Miss Fritz? It was preposterous, unexplainable. Even if she could bring herself to try to tell her, Miss Fritz would never, never understand.
That description of a situation in which she didn't mean to be bad was written by Jacqueline Jackson, but the author could be you. WSSR Radio at Sangamon State University presents Reading and Writing and Radio, a program about creative writing. Your host is Jacqueline Jackson, children's author and professor of literature at Sangamon State University. To begin today's program, here's Ken Ost.
What do you actually mean, Jackie, by not meaning to be bad?
Well, I think there are plenty of situations where we really do mean to be bad, mm-hmm. where we're feeling mean and ugly and we want to hurt somebody or we want to get rid of our feelings and that we deliberately do things that we know.
Kick the chair or other slam
people,
the door.
Yeah, slam the door on purpose or smack your sister on purpose. But the kind of incidents that I'd like to talk about today are those incidents where you behave in all innocence, that your feelings are friendly, happy, joyful, curious, certainly not ugly feelings. And then, after the fact, you discover that this action, what it is that you've done, is not acceptable to other people. That this is something that your parents or society or your music teacher frowns on. And so the pain of these situations is of a peculiar sort. When you've done something deliberately bad, you know that there's going to be perhaps some sort of retribution. But when you do something in innocent joy, then when the retribution comes, It is especially poignant and unhappy.
You hadn't been aware that people would take it this way or that it would turn out this way.
Yes, and this is especially true when you're a young child because you haven't yet learned all the things that the world frowns on, or more specifically, the older people. For instance, I have a story about when I was a little girl, 3 or 4 years old, that I've told my now 5-year-old so many times, and the story is, when I was very small, I went into my grandmother's bedroom, and here was her dressing table with its fascinating array of implements and powder boxes and lotion jars and combs and such on it. And I sat up on the stool of her dressing table and examined the items one by one. And the most fascinating item was a beautiful little pair of miniature scissors. I suppose it was a cuticle scissors or a very delicate little nail scissors. And I remember picking up that little pair of shiny silver scissors, and it just fitted my fingers, and snipping around in the air with these scissors. And of course, scissors are supposed to cut. And so my next thought was to look around and see what there was to cut. Well, unfortunately, there wasn't a newspaper or something lying on my grandmother's bed, but I spotted her closet, which was open a crack. And I went into her closet, and I can still recall the feel of the limp dresses hanging there, pervaded with the special odor of my grandmother. A few house dresses, but this was her closet for her better dresses, silks and the so forth that she wore to church. And I went down the line of my grandmother's best dresses, and with that little scissors, I snipped one hole in each dress.
Oh.
I wasn't thinking at all. I am doing something my grandmother isn't going to like. Mm. I was testing out these beautiful little scissors. I can picture my grandmother coming and slipping on a good dress, discovering a hole in it, her dismay, taking it off,
trying another one,
discovering the hole, her dismay, and it must have led to little Jackie. And I don't so much remember what happened, whether I was punished. My mother thinks I probably wasn't because I was so little. But what stands out to me very vividly and why I remember this whole episode in such clear detail was the shock that I had that this wasn't something that was okay, that I had done something that I shouldn't have and that all the grown-ups were upset. Well, now the feelings that go along with this are pretty complicated. You, first of all, I guess, maybe they're so mixed up you can't tell what's first, but even at the tender age of 3 or 4, or however old I was, I think once it was pointed out to me that dresses cost money and you don't cut holes in dresses and so forth, that I realized it was a stupid thing to do. And so I was chagrined that I had been so stupid. And I think also that nobody likes to inflict pain on other people, and I must have felt unhappy that I was causing pain, and there must have also been defensive feelings that I didn't really know I was doing what I shouldn't have done. And even more, you lose some self-respect.
You mentioned you could go on and give me many examples of these things that happened. Give me one more, Jackie, if you
will.
Well,
they aren't all my own experiences, no, necessarily. One of my students told me about when he was a little boy and had been helping with the gardening and the attraction that he had for the little green pepper bushes. Now, if you've ever seen a green pepper growing, it grows on a little shrub, and the leaves are very glossy, and the green pepper is very glossy.
Very attractive.
It's an attractive plant. And one day, this little boy, who was about 7 at the time, decided that he would assist his father more, you know, without being asked. And so he went out and he got a basket and he went down the rows and he picked every green pepper on the bushes. And they make a very nice object to pick. They give a satisfying snap. You don't have to twist the stem or anything, and they feel warm and smooth in your hand. And he picked these green peppers, he told me, with intense pleasure. Both the pleasure of the actual physical act and also the pleasure of being helpful to his father. Well, his father found he'd picked all the green peppers and the kid got a real walloping. And he's never forgotten that.
This reminds me of a thing that I did when I was a kid. Just that story itself. I was about 4 or 5 and I went into a tulip bed. And they were beautifully blossomed, and I put each tulip between my fingers and snapped the heads off as I went along the path. And
a tulip snaps in that same delightful way.
Yes, and I didn't do it maliciously, as I remember, but, you know, snapped every head off every tulip in the entire tulip bed.
I've heard this story from a couple of different people, so I think it's rather a common occurrence. Maybe it happened to you, too. The first person that told me said that it was about second grade, and he had his desk next to the radiator in this school. and he accidentally touched the radiator with one of his crayons. And the crayon melted and dripped down on the side of the silver radiator in quite a lovely drip. And this drip fascinated him, and he thought it was beautiful. And so he took his other crayons and deliberately touched the radiator and made a work of art out of the side of this radiator. Well, the teacher discovered what he was doing, and, oh, you naughty boy, and he had to clean up the entire radiator, and nobody appreciated that he had done something beautiful. And yet his thoughts at the time of touching the radiator and afterwards were, let's see what I can do with this creation. And I told that story the other day, and a woman said, well, I did that too when I was little, and I had to, when the radiator got cold, I had to go and chip all that crayon off the radiator.
This brings up a question, and we've been talking about cutting dresses or snapping the heads off tulips or whatever. And there are things that were not done maliciously, but they're wrong things. How about if the situation is such that the issues aren't clear-cut, mm-hmm. even after mm-hmm. you're blamed for something, you still don't think it was possibly as wrong as the parents think?
This, of course, makes it much more complicated, because there are times when it's perfectly all right to clip dresses. And I could imagine a situation, well, I've gone through fields of daisies, wild daisies, and just, you know, there's millions of them. And so you can pull the heads off them as you go along, and you get a certain satisfaction. You're not really destroying beauty. You're sort of part of it, you know. But this problem of when the situation is right and when it isn't right is very complicated. It's complicated enough when you're grown up, but it's a million times more complicated when you're a child. For instance, in a household, suppose there's something that doesn't bother your mother that you do, but that bothers your father, or that bothers your big sister. You see, where is the point of authority? And then there's all the issues that in your heart you think to yourself, there's really nothing wrong with that. It's wrong with the grown-up to think that there's something wrong with it, or the big sister, or the so forth. I was only. So that here is the problem, not only that you do something bad that is obvious afterwards to everybody concerned that it's bad, but there's the whole area of, you know, is it really? Is it really so bad? Did I really do something so awful?
Well, now, you've written about some of the things that happened to you when you were young, but you've written about them recently when you're grown up. Could it be a case that for a young author who has done something bad, in quotes, just recently, doesn't want to write about it because it's too painful to write about?
These incidents can be very painful. They were to me. And it's true that it's harder, often harder, to write about something shortly after it's happened or just at the time than with the perspective of age. Now, say, if you're 11 years old, you could write with some tolerance about what you did when you were 3. I have a story that an 11-year-old wrote me about somehow getting into the medicine cabinet, which she should never have been able to do. Mm. But having the delight of dumping all the medicine into the toilet, and what a beautiful sight this was, especially when she pulled the handle, and here swirling around with the pink pills and the triangular pills and the multicolored pills and all these various pills swirling round and round in the toilet and then disappearing with a very satisfying glug. Well, the result of that was both that she was punished and that she was rushed to the hospital to have her stomach pumped out because the mother didn't know whether to believe her or not, that mm-hmm. she had dumped them all down the toilet. Mm-hmm. Well, now, she was able to write that at 11 years old because it was far enough in the distance that she could have a sort of grown-up tolerance toward the little girl that she'd been. But suppose it was just this morning that you or I did something stupid or were badly misunderstood, that in our innocence we did something and then were misunderstood and it made us look thoughtless or mean or you know, it happens just all the time, whether we're 3 or 13 or 30.
It's hard to be objective.
It's hard to be objective. Well, one way, when you pick up your pencil and start to write these things out, and it helps to write them out, it helps to get them down on paper. One very good way is to tell it as if it happened to somebody else. Now, this little incident with the slamming the door at the cello lesson, I used somebody else's name for that. and I used a different name for the cello teacher, so that you can write it sort of objectively, tell it as if it's happening to somebody else, and yet you can invest it with all those strong feelings that you had yourself. If you're writing down these sorts of stories in a classroom situation, for instance, ask your teacher or have your teacher suggest that you don't need to sign your name if you don't want to. This is known as being anonymous. If you write a painful story or an embarrassing story, don't sign your name. Or tell it with other people's names.
In fact, you can even, beyond signing someone else's name, make that person the other sex. If you're a girl and had this thing happen, make it a little boy that it happened to.
Yeah, a girl could have picked those peppers.
Sure.
And it was both a girl and a boy that told me about touching the radiator with the crayons.
And a boy could have slammed that door or cut those dresses.
That's right. That's right. It's those particular stories don't mm-hmm. depend on whether
you're
a boy or a girl.
Then.
But these vivid stories that have happened to all of us get their main interest, I think, in putting in all these little vivid details. If I were just to say, once when I was little, I took my grandmother's scissors and went into her closet and cut all the dresses, you get a sense of something, but it isn't very interesting.
You're not there, really.
You're not there.
As you are when you read that the way you wrote it.
But if you include, you know, the limp feel of the silky dresses and the smell of the dresses and the sort of tidiness of the room with all these things laid out, and if you include the feel of that smooth, sun-warmed green pepper and spying it down among the leaves and the snap of when you snap it off, then the person reading your story gets the joy of that situation too. And then when the walloping comes, it's even more of a shock. And not only that, it's a lot more fun to write. I would much rather write out the story of snipping those little scissors in the air than the way I just described it to you. The fun is in putting in the vivid details that not only help you to relive the experience, but let somebody else have the fun and the pain of reliving that same experience and then immediately saying, oh, something like that happened to me.
The difference between a good story and a dull story right
yes,
there.
Yes, yes.
Okay, Jackie, that sounds interesting. Now, the you authors out there, if you have done some of these things, let us know about them. These are the stories now where you didn't really mean to be bad.
WSSR Radio has presented Reading and Writing and Radio. Send your writings to Jacqueline Jackson, Sangamon State University, Springfield, Illinois, 62708.